Welcome to the Infotainment Podcast Initiating Startup Sequence.
Hi, my name is Randy, and the Infotainment Podcast will begin shortly. I will be your round mound of podcast sound, pound for pound, the best podcast around. It is March 19th today, and here I sit in a virtual shutdown of the city government buildings. No haircuts or manicures. The restaurants and bars are closed, except for drive-through and delivery. We don't have like Postmates here in this small town, and virtually on a lockdown of a lot of stuff. So I guess I will have Michael Landon hair for most of 2020. Some of you in a certain age range may get that reference, but what really made me mad was here I sit in a virtual isolation every day, and I watch the news, and they show a split screen. They show a picture of Paris, which looked abandoned from the view I got of the video. And then on the right side of the split screen, they show the beach in South Florida with thousands of spring breakers sitting there.
Do you know what it is you are? What you may have thought that you could give your friend? Because of this virus. This is the voice of death.
I mean, somebody's got to beat it into the head. Heads of these kids that they may be invincible against the virus, but they may carry it. They may not suffer severe symptoms themselves, but guess who you're putting at risk? Your parents and other family members, neighbors, anyone you meet may get this virus from you. And may get really sick, and in a worst-case scenario, die from it. So you don't know, and here in this state in Minnesota, we do not have enough testing supplies, so our cases are not accurate. The numbers keep going up as people who are at the most risk are getting tested. It just makes me mad to see that photo. It's like, parents, knock some sense into your kids. This isn't a time to be at the beach. unless you're, you know, way away from everybody. But if you're sitting there with a bunch of people around you, you know, you don't know where, if that person has coronavirus, COVID-19, and then you carry it around and pass it on, and they pass it on. It's just like a domino effect. Now, I did see a news clip, a very short one, of a spring breaker on the beach who wins Moron of the Year for 2020. He stated that, if I get corona, I get corona. That's not going to stop me from partying. Oh, my God. What are you thinking, dude? All I did yesterday was take a walk around to see what notes were in businesses' doors, our courthouse or government center, or commonly known as today, they used to be called courthouses. Closed until further notice. Library is closed. City Hall is closed. All bars and restaurants are closed. It's just like, you know, one state can have really strict rules on this, and then the next state over can really have lax rules. And then what does that accomplish? It's like everyone for themselves. Governor Cuomo said, you know, if you have the strictest policy in the neighboring state, doesn't do much at all as far as this thing goes. It doesn't really help them at all, because those people bring it back to your state once you've leveled the curve or brought it down some. So I don't know where we go with this. Supposedly this shutdown of stuff is to last till the 31st of this month. But I'm fearing that it's going to go a lot longer and encompass a lot more things once more accurate numbers come from testing when we get in those supplies. On one brighter note, I know the University of Minnesota is testing a medicine that has been around for a long time, malaria medicine, to see if that will help with people with symptoms. Hopefully that will go well, be of help for people who develop it. Like the president, I'm hopeful that these already available malaria drugs are do well in the most advanced cases of coronavirus. And those for whom are just showing symptoms, and the disease is just, or the virus is just starting. But I do have something new here that could have gone on the last episode, but I just now became aware of it. It's from the Daily Mail in the UK. It states that the China's coronavirus did come from bats. Scientists there reveal the virus is 96% identical to one found in the animals, is almost the same as SARS, as global death toll hits 362. I'm not sure when this was, but I'm sure that number has changed. Finding the animal source of the virus has been challenging so far. Scientists in Wuhan analyzed samples taken from 7 coronavirus patients. They found a 96% similarity in the virus DNA to a coronavirus in bats. This makes it the most probable source, but this is yet to be confirmed. 2019 nCoV is also 79.5% similar with SARS, which could help with vaccines. Bats are the likely cause of coronavirus from China after scientists find the virus is almost 100% identical. It was believed to have transferred to humans from an animal, but identifying which one has been challenging. Global cases have risen above 17,450, which I'm sure has changed. Although scientists stress the animal source of the recent outbreak in China is yet to be officially declared, experts have confirmed a wholesale animal market in Wuhan City is to blame. And I will give President Trump credit. He did take a couple swipes at China, saying this could have been contained to a much smaller area had they been forthcoming after the first few incidents of it. Instead of hiding that information, it might not have been the global mess it is today. Let's see. The Wuhan market, a menagerie of live animals, including koalas, rats, and wolf pups, were available there, the outbreak's epicenter. Most research has pointed towards bats. Research at Peking University implicates snakes as the most likely reservoir of the rapidly spreading virus. The Hunan market was a hot spot with locals who could choose to buy their meat warm, meaning it had been slaughtered just moments prior. Dr. Michael Skinner, reader in viruses at Imperial College London, said the discovery definitely places the origin in bats. We still don't know whether another species served as an intermediate host to amplify the virus and possibly even to bring it to the market, nor what species that host might have been. But the high level of sequence similarity between nCoV and TG13 is not really compatible with some of the more exotic hosts that were considered earlier in the epidemic. Zhang Li Shi, a researcher and virologist, he works with viruses, analyzed samples of 7 people with what's been dubbed 2019 nCoV. 6 of those were workers at the market in Wuhan, where cases were first reported in December. Maybe in December that should have been told to the world. The team found that full-length genome sequences, which determine the DNA from the virus, from 5 of the patients were almost 100% identical to each other. They compared it with TG13, a coronavirus in bats, and found the virus sequence 96% identical. A jump between species is rare and makes this virus capable of infecting different species. Bats are unaffected by the pathogens in their bloodstreams, but people have no protection to these viruses, as they are foreign to human immune systems. And once in humans, it can be easily passed from person to person through coughs and sneezes. Well, let's get off the topic of varmints and other creepy crawlies that are sold at wet markets in China. I do have some friends on Facebook. I would say classify as conservative and ultra-conservative, possibly would apply. I made some statements about what people are lacking in the field as far as personal protective equipment, and they seem to take it as that I was totally bashing Trump and that he was the cause of all this. And I tried to state there is plenty of blame to go around. I'm not blaming any one person. but they just keep telling me to check the facts on this. And Trump did stop travel with China, that was very good. but we were slow to respond once this was more widely known was going to cause a problem. So I've been told to do my fact checking. So let's check out some facts that Trump has given out on the coronavirus. Let's see. Here we go. President Donald Trump misstated the facts Thursday when he asserted that the Food and Drug Administration had just approved a decades-old malaria drug to treat patients infected by the new coronavirus. After his FDA chief clarified that the drug still needs testing, Trump also overstated the drug's potential upside in helping contain the outbreak. A look at his claims at a news briefing. Trump: "And we are going to be able to make the drug available almost immediately, and that's where the FDA has been so great. They've gone through the approval process. It's been approved." The facts: the drug, known chemically as chloroquine, has been available for decades to treat the mosquito-borne illness malaria. Technically, doctors can already prescribe the drug to patients with COVID-19, a practice known as off-label prescribing. But Trump falsely suggested to reporters that the FDA has just cleared the drug specifically for the viral pandemic spreading in communities across the U.S. That would mean that the drug had met the FDA standards for safety and effectiveness. Minutes later, FDA Commissioner Dr. Stephen Hahn emphasized that the drug still needs testing to determine if it can help patients. He said chloroquine would have to be tested in a large, pragmatic clinical trial to actually gather that information. Drug trials typically require hundreds or thousands of patients, and even when accelerated, takes weeks or months to complete. In his remarks, Hahn reflected on his background as a cancer doctor and warned against giving patients false hope before drugs are fully vetted. While chloroquine has shown promise in preliminary laboratory studies, some experts are skeptical it will prove effective in human testing. "I think it could be a game changer." I do remember him saying that. "And maybe not," Trump said, discussing the drug. Yeah, I remember that statement specifically. But the FDA reiterated in a statement Thursday that there are no FDA-approved therapeutics or drugs to treat, cure, or prevent COVID-19. Trump: "If chloroquine or hydroxychloroquine works, or any of the other things that they're looking at that are not quite as far out, your numbers are going to come down very rapidly." The facts: the drug he's referring to are for treatment in patients already infected. That doesn't help spread. That doesn't prevent spread of the virus. One study is testing chloroquine to try to protect healthcare workers at highest risk of infection, because a vaccine is likely a year or more away. I've heard like 18 months or possibly more. I don't get it. I think it's short-sighted to take everything Trump says as 100% gospel on this thing. I mean, listen to your health professionals first. I don't think Trump is getting his facts straight before he speaks sometimes. Gets a little bit ahead of himself. Okay, I'm going to do some more fact-checking. When asked about the coronavirus test shortage, Trump falsely attacks the media. President Donald Trump claimed Tuesday that he had always known the coronavirus outbreak was a pandemic. So a reporter asked him on Thursday, if he had known this, why was the country not prepared, or I will say better prepared than it is today, to do the necessary coronavirus testing? Trump responded with a claim so inaccurate it bordered on the nonsensical. We were very prepared. The only thing we weren't prepared for was this, the media. The media has not treated it fairly. I am not the big media. I'm not blaming any one person, but to even bring the press into that was, he always has someone to blame, you know. Trump said at the White House briefing, facts. The insufficient number of tests available to Americans had nothing to do with the media. Prominent media outlets have accurately reported that there was a shortage of tests and a shortage of key testing supplies. That testing was not being made available even to some sick people whose doctors wanted them tested. That initial test kits from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention were faulty, and that lawmakers from both parties were unhappy with the unavailability of tests. Trump, conversely, for weeks downplayed the risk posed by the coronavirus. The media outlet he cites most frequently, Fox News, did the same. Trump and his team have made multiple inaccurate claims on the subject of coronavirus testing. Trump has wrongly blamed a non-existent rule change by President Barack Obama, and I'm not saying I would trust his advice on this 100% either. So, administration for supposedly impeding testing. And Trump misled the public about the availability of tests, wrongly claiming on March 6th that anybody that wants a test can get a test. That's what the bottom line is. Health and Human Services Secretary Alec Azar claimed Trump was using shorthand for the fact that we as regulators or those shipping the tests are not restricting who can get tested. Azar himself has exaggerated the number of people who have been tested. Azar also falsely claimed on March 6th that there is no testing kit shortage, nor has there ever been. Though Vice President Mike Pence had said the day prior, we don't have enough tests today to meet what we anticipate will be the demand going forward. Well, let's check some more of Trump's facts and put them to the test. Let's see. Ignoring years of warnings, Trump falsely claims nobody in their wildest dreams predicted a ventilator shortage. President Donald Trump faced new and troubling questions Thursday about his response to the coronavirus pandemic, as it became clear that there is a nationwide shortage of ventilators, masks, and other crucial medical equipment. During a White House news conference, Trump was asked about the shortages and responded by falsely suggesting that the problem was unforeseen. He also shrugged off responsibility for the crisis and encouraged states to find their own resources. The states have some responsibility, but I think it's the president that has to kind of take the lead on what gets done, and the states doing different rules on what can be done as far as large gathering and groups. If one state is really strict and one is really lax, it's not going to help the situation at all. Where you have a problem with ventilators, we're working very hard trying to find ventilators, the president said. I have no reason to doubt that. Nobody in their wildest dreams would have ever thought that we need tens of thousands of ventilators. This is something very unique to what happened. Trump is wrong. Medical experts and public health officials have said for years that the U.S. would face a shortage of ventilators if there were ever a pandemic like COVID-19. Even during Trump's presidency, there were warnings that hospitals would run out of life-saving equipment and resources would be strained because the U.S. wasn't prepared for a pandemic. Since the beginning of the crisis earlier this year, Trump and his team have responded with dozens of dishonest and misleading claims, and the president's comments about the ventilator shortages fit into the pattern of trying to avoid responsibility by falsely claiming that nobody ever predicted a pandemic like this, which he said many times, even after it's been widely debunked. Potential for widespread shortages. Regarding the shortages of medical equipment, the warning signs were there. Multiple U.S. government studies conducted during the Obama administration with support from the National Institute of Health found that the U.S. wouldn't have enough ventilators during a pandemic. A January 2011 study, which was supported by the National Institute of Health, said that without a doubt, the current ventilator supply in the United States is nowhere near sufficient to meet the projected needs of a pandemic like the Spanish flu of 1918, which killed tens of millions of people around the world. A U.S. study from June 2011 explored questions of rationing ventilators, which is what Italian hospitals are grappling with as the coronavirus claims thousands of lives there. The study concluded, like the other ones, that a severe flu pandemic would lead to ventilator shortages. Now, I'll cut Trump some slack that no one could have foreseen the needs of so many in such a short time. And that is, we can trace that back to China not being transparent about this from the beginning. And we could have been at least better prepared, but we still had some time in there to be better prepared, which was squandered away. Hospitals will likely experience serious and widespread shortages of patient pulmonary ventilators and of a staff qualified to operate them. The report's abstract said, deciding who will receive access to mechanical ventilation will often determine who lives and who dies. Another study released in April 2015 by the Health Organization and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimated that the U.S. would likely need as many as 60,000 additional ventilators to deal with a severe flu pandemic scenario. Those additional machines could save 35,000 to 306,000 American lives depending upon the percentage of people who get sick, the report said. These studies also noted that the problem is bigger than a lack of machines. In a pandemic, hospitals would struggle to find trained professionals to operate the ventilators. They might not have enough space for the bulky machines and crowded intensive care units, and there might be interruptions in the supply chain of the oxygen-rich gas that ventilators use to keep people alive. Warnings in the Trump era. Warnings continued after Trump became president and installed his own appointees to key positions. The warnings continued after Trump became president and installed his own appointees to key positions that deal with pandemics like the Department of Health and Human Services. During Trump's first year in office, officials from the CDC participated in a simulation featuring a viral pandemic that forced a surge of patients to rely on ventilators, according to the Washington Post. The October 2017 simulation led the World Bank, including ministers from a dozen countries and the World Health Organization. The U.S. intelligence community warned in 2018 and 2019 that the U.S. was vulnerable to a large-scale flu or coronavirus pandemic, which would strain governmental and international resources. Though it did not mention shortages of its specific medical equipment, these reports were released by then-director of national intelligence, Dan Coats, a Trump appointee. Even some prominent Americans outside of the government has raised the alarm. Microsoft founder Bill Gates, whose philanthropic foundation has spent billions of dollars to stop the spread of infectious diseases, warned in 2018, a lecture, that the health infrastructure we have for normal times breaks down very rapidly during major infectious disease outbreaks. On Wednesday, Trump invoked the decades-old Defense Production Act to spur production of medical supplies, which is a good thing, but said he would use the emergency powers only in a worst-case scenario in the future. And even if I mention the name, the next name, people would tear me to shreds because they hate her so much. Trump said he wants to wait. He doesn't want to use the law immediately, and that thousands of new ventilators are on the way. We have a tremendous amount of numbers of ventilators, Trump said Wednesday at the White House, but there's never been an instance like this where no matter what you have, it's not enough. This is not exactly a fact check, but it is exactly what Trump said to a reporter that asked a legitimate question. And it says he viciously attacks NBC reporter in extended rant after being asked for a message to Americans worried about coronavirus. In an extraordinary exchange on Friday, President Donald Trump viciously attacked an NBC reporter who asked what his message would be to Americans who are frightened by the coronavirus pandemic that is spreading across the country. The exchange, which occurred at the White House Daily Coronavirus Task Force briefing, began when NBC News reporter Peter Alexander asked Trump whether he was giving Americans false hope by touting unproven coronavirus drugs. Toward the end of the exchange, Alexander cited the latest pandemic statistics showed thousands of Americans are now infected and millions are scared. Alexander asked, "What do you say to Americans who are scared?" Trump, shaking his head, ripped into Alexander in response. "I say that you are a terrible reporter," Trump said. "That's what I say." Yep, this is our president, people. Always somebody to push off tough questions and misstate things. But I go on. The president proceeded to launch into an extended rant against Alexander, saying he asked a nasty question. That was nasty. What do you say to Americans that are worried about this? I would like to think Ronald Reagan would have said something a little bit more eloquent, not giving false hope, but encouraging Americans to be vigilant about distancing and washing hands and all the stuff that is known to help prevent this. But Trump is assailing NBC and its parent company, Comcast. You're doing sensationalism, Trump charged. And the same with NBC and Comcast. I don't call it Comcast. I call it Concast. Yeah, it's always all the media's fault for misjudging Trump. Let me just tell you something, Trump added. That's really bad reporting, and you ought to get back to reporting instead of sensationalism. Moments later, Caitlin Collins, a White House correspondent for CNN, asked Trump if it was appropriate to embark on tirades against members of the news media during a public health crisis. You see yourself as a wartime president now, leading the country through a pandemic that we are experiencing, Collins noted. Do you think going off on Peter, going off on a network is appropriate when the country is going through something like this? I don't. And I even think both George Bushes would have said something, you know, a little better than that. I don't know. Trump acts like a school kid sometimes. And he's always trying to pick a fight with somebody. Trump defended his verbal assault on Alexander, saying he's not a good journalist, and launched into another rant against him. Coming together is much harder when we have dishonest journalists, Trump said. Alexander said in a statement that he was trying to provide the president an opportunity to reassure the millions of Americans, members of my own family and my neighbors and my community and plenty of people sitting at home. This was his opportunity to do that. Has Trump even mentioned the people who have died, the people who have already been affected by this at all? Any mention of them? He was offered the opportunity to provide a positive or uplifting message, which didn't misinform people about drugs that are weeks, if not months, from being out there, but provide some positive or uplifting message. Hey, I'm here to tell you, I'm not saying that any Republican wouldn't do that. I'd say Ronald Reagan would. I'd say both George Bushes would. A man even, I think Bill Clinton would act more maturely than that. But instead, you saw the president's answer to that question right now. The bottom line is, this is a president whose experiences in life are very different than most Americans across the country right now, Alexander said. Not a person who likely worries about finances. Well, he worries about his own. And, he has tried to push through some things, so I'll give him a little slack on that. I don't know if it's going to happen on his time frame. Probably not, but not a person who in this course of his life is worried about his future, not a person who is worried about where to find a paycheck for his bills or for his rent. And as evidenced by the president suggesting that an opportunity to provide for Americans some reassurance about how they should feel right now, the president instead took it out on me. Alexander's NBC News colleague and host of Meet the Press weighed in on the matter, praising him for his professionalism. I wish people on the other side of the podium had the same professionalism as well. You know, after striking a somber tone early in the week, Trump in recent days has returned to his usual attacks against the press. Yeah, this is really the time for that. I mean, I know they've been really hard on you in the past, but it's just like, do your job and don't constantly just talk about the fucking press. At Thursday's coronavirus press briefing, Trump smeared the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Washington Post. They're very dishonest, Trump claimed. Trump then praised the far-right media outlet, saying it is very good and noting they treat me very nicely. Is that the press's job, to treat you nicely? They're there to report what you do and what you say, you know, and they're going to find out if something is factual or not on what you do and what you say. Well, I was kind of, let me try and go back to doing some more fact-checking here. Let's see. Here's another thing. No, President Trump, the coronavirus is nothing like H1N1 swine flu either. As the coronavirus has escalated in recent weeks, President Donald Trump has repeatedly compared it to the handling of the H1N1 swine flu outbreak of 2009. In 3 press briefings and 5 tweets since March 1st, the president has compared his administration's handling of the coronavirus favorably to the way Barack Obama's team dealt with the H1N1 outbreak, which infected 60 million Americans. This comes after Trump spent weeks saying the coronavirus paled in comparison to the seasonal flu, a comparison we debunked over the weekend. Interestingly, if you go back, please, and if you go back to the swine flu, it was nothing like this. They didn't do testing like this, and actually they lost approximately 14,000 people, and they didn't do testing. They started thinking about testing when it was far too late, the president said at a press briefing on March 13th. Or this on March 15th. The USA was never set up for this. Just look at the catastrophe of the H1N1 swine flu. Biden in charge, 17,000 people lost, very late response time, but it soon will be. Great decision to close our China and other borders early, saved many lives. Well, I agree with that. Donald Trump. The president is wrong in multiple ways. First, the swine flu did not kill 17,000 people, as Trump maintained in his tweet, nor did it kill 14,000, the figure he cited days earlier. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has estimated that H1N1 killed about 12,500 Americans between April 2009 and 2010. Far fewer people than typically die each year from the flu. Trump has gotten this figure right on other occasions. Second, the president characterized the government's response that does not match reality. If anything, the response to H1N1 was swift in comparison to the current administration's handling of the coronavirus. I assume what he's trying to say is somehow he's doing a much better job. Kathleen Sebelius, Secretary of Health and Human Services under Obama, said in an interview Wednesday, "I just find that totally baffling. Anybody who looks at the comparisons very quickly understands that this is not the case." From first case to approved test, 2 weeks, though the H1N1 virus had begun spreading in Mexico. The first case in the U.S. was detected on April 15, 2009, in a 10-year-old patient in California. 2 days later, CDC laboratory testing confirmed a second infection in an 8-year-old living in California. Within 1 week, the CDC had activated its emergency operations center to respond to what it had identified as an emerging public health threat. Before the end of April, the government had declared a public health emergency and started releasing medical supplies and drugs from the CDC's Strategic National Stockpile. The real-time PCR test developed by CDC was clearly for use by diagnostic laboratories by FDA under an emergency use authorization. On April 28, 2009, less than 2 weeks after identifying the new pandemic virus. 2 weeks. Sebelius remembers that date well. It was the day she was sworn in as HHS Secretary, Health and Human Services. The test developed by the CDC was created quickly. It was accurate, and it was shared with governments around the world. The capacity of CDC at that point to make and develop and quickly turn out a test was vastly different from what we saw occurring with the coronavirus, Sebelius said. In an interview, Dr. Tom Frieden, who was CDC director under Obama, said testing for H1N1 and the United States' willingness to share its tests with other countries was a success. I traveled all over the world, and for years afterward, even very hostile governments were saying thank you for sending it to us. Coronavirus testing, on the other hand, remains mired in delays, though the first person in the United States was confirmed to have the virus on January 20th. A series of problems have kept testing out of reach for many patients with telltale symptoms of the virus. The CDC designed a flawed test for COVID-19. Then it took weeks to figure out a fix so state and local labs could use it. You know, right there, I would, you know, not include Trump in that, you know, mess up there, but ProPublica found Trump said on March 6th that anybody who wants a test gets a test. Well, that's a damn fucking lie right there. But many doctors, patients, and public health leaders say that is not the case. On Wednesday, Ohio Governor Mike DeWine, a Republican, said testing is limited. It will, in all likelihood, remain limited. COVID-19 testing, please do not fixate on testing. The vast majority of Ohioans, I'm so freaking mad about, who have symptoms do not need to be tested for the virus. If you are feeling symptoms, you should act like you have it. Yeah, I'm acting like a habit, sticking to my apartment as much as possible. And if I go out for a walk, staying away from people as much as I can. You know, if somebody's walking close to me, I'll go across the frickin' street. I don't care. I've heard there's some cases here in either our town or our county. Almost from the day H1N1 strain of flu was identified, researchers set out to develop a vaccine for it. And a candidate was selected. Clinical trials began in July, and on September 15th, the Food and Drug Administration approved four 2009 H1N1 influenza vaccines. The first doses of vaccines were available in October, and by December, 100 million doses were available to be ordered. The vaccine production didn't go as smoothly as officials hoped. By October, the CDC and Frieden were called to task about the pace of the manufacturing process. Oh, geez. And then they just go on that. As of yet, there is no vaccine for the coronavirus. And we are looking at a year or 18 months or longer for that to happen. The disease is novel and appears to behave differently than the flu, so it will likely take longer to develop a vaccine, which would not be the fault of the Trump administration. And I agree with that. The first patients in a clinical trial of a vaccine were given shots this week, but Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, cautioned that the process may take a year or more. We're close to starting phase one trial to determine safety, he said recently on CNN. We're going to do that in about 1.5 to 2 months, but that doesn't mean you have a vaccine. In order to get a vaccine that's practically deployable for people to use, it's going to be at least a year to a year and a half at best. If Trump wants to learn from H1N1, he could start readying manufacturing capabilities right now. So once the coronavirus vaccine is proven to be safe and effective, there won't be any delay. Well, I think I'm going to end my rant. And it makes me upset that it's like my opinion doesn't matter to some people. And it's all shit. And you got to check your facts. And well, I went through and I did some fact checking on what Trump said versus what is actually the case. And I hate being mad at people, but if you just take Trump 100% as gospel, or you would follow Trump and his conservative brethren off a cliff like that, go ahead, but I'm not. I'd rather listen to the health officials than what Trump says anyway. He could just as well not be there. As much as inspiration he is to the American people about instead of just bashing the press, which is so fucking immature to do that during this kind of thing, but I don't know. What do you do? I might not even edit this and just leave it. Just let it go, because I just want to get it posted. And now we will shall end this podcast and warp drive it to the interwebs for your podcast perusal. May you have a happy day today and a happy ending tonight. Goodbye, folks.